going on down there?
Ladies and gentlemen, one last time for season two, welcome to WTF
Prime Time!
This is Vangelis. I am joined by Gog Dog.
Hey. Hi. I'm currently playing with my Voyager Dreadwing and Voyager Breakdown figures. I like them a lot. They're great figures.
They're wonderful figures. I'm told at least Dreadwing's wonderful. I'm still trying to find one. Yeah, great toys. We're also joined tonight by Aaron.
Howdy.
How you doing?
Doing all right.
Excellent. Well, we're recording this on November the 6th, 2012, with two Americans. So I am looking forward to talking about some Transformers Prime. We're going to talk about the final two episodes of Season 2. I want to actually throw a quick shout-out to Ryder Pathos, who kind of, on Twitter, put the idea in my head that given how regeneration played out, it might be worth just doing a double feature. And I was like, yeah, I guess, but we're going to, maybe. And so I went in the thread, and it seemed like the consensus was, let's just double feature it, because otherwise we would have tried to record on Halloween, and that would have been a bother for Aaron. You and your candy and whatnot.
Yep.
So let's start off by talking a bit about regeneration. I guess an easy topic to open up with would be Dreadwing. Fantastic toy. Great Voyager toy. Pretty cool voice actor, Tony Todd. You might remember him as the Candyman from the Candyman horror films. He shows up after sending out a Starscream-style communications call, and it gives the Autobots the Forge of Solus Prime. Sometime off-screen, he just picked it up and walked out of the Decepticon ship with it, and went to the foggy mountains of fog and handed it over, and then said he's losing faith in what's going on with Decepticons, and declines to join the Autobots, heads back to the Decepticon base, and yeah, that answers the question of how the Forge of Solus Prime makes it over to the Autobot side as Dreadwing hands it over to them in a show of, I guess, like, that's the honorable way to help out your former foes when you've lost faith in your own kind. He actually has a really cool line about why he doesn't join the Autobots, but the wording of it I actually entirely have forgotten because it's been a couple days since I saw the episode. Something like, it's one thing to turn on your kind to betray them or something. But that was a neat moment. That was a cool, exciting way to start the episode off, although I did kind of try to just not think about how he took the giant golden crackling hammer out of the Decepticon ship without anybody noticing. I'm sure there are many ways that one could logic it out, but that did kind of make me scratch my chin for a second.
Just flies off the top of the ship with it, since yeah. All the relics tend to transform along with you.
I was just thinking, like, maybe because the Omega Keys are under such heavy guard, the Forge of Solus Prime was just left behind on the bridge or something. It was just chilling out in a hallway in a box that said, do not touch. Aaron, what were your thoughts on that opening revelation of Dreadwing losing his faith?
I liked it, but at the same time felt like, okay, so if you're going to betray your own guys, I guess maybe it's some other logic or honor step in there why betraying your own guys to hand over one of the most powerful things out there is not as bad as just going with them back to base.
Because it's one thing to betray what you believe in, but another thing to turn your back on your own kind.
Yeah. I don't know. It just seems like after you've made that big of a step, that because it's not like he made like a cardboard cutout and, oh yeah, there's still the Forge. Nobody's paying attention to it. You know, it's going to become painfully clear at some point that the Forge is missing and that, you know, only so many people could have taken it.
Yeah.
It just seems like at that point, go to the Autobots where you at least would have protection or a place, but it was story reason for what happens later.
Yeah, well, it's also Dreadwing priorities, which is kind of like Klingon priorities. You
know, yeah, honor, I guess that's true, because
honor,
he's still...
blah, blah, blah.
he still did have the other tasks that he wanted to take care of. So
he had a thing he needed to do. But Gog, I guess starting off here and moving on into a bit more about Dreadwing, how'd you feel about him handing over the Forge of Solus Prime?
We just covering that part for now?
I want to cover that part first and then kind of flow into the other part.
You know, it's fine, I guess. I mean, I kind of like the general concept of the fact that those screwed up things that are going on inside the Decepticons actually led to dissension and the Autobots getting a chance at victory from within their own. And that's good. Like, it's a lot better than some rescue mission where Smokescreen goes into the ship yet again and uses his phase shifter yet again to recover it. You know, I like the concept there for sure. I guess I can't really say more without going into the rest. But
well, yeah, let's move into the rest. So Dreadwing then goes back to the
make
ship.
Make me talk around it.
There is a I want to see if we could pull it off, but I'm okay moving into that. Dreadwing goes back to the ship. Megatron says, "Listen, we need solidarity if we're going to take over Cybertron." And so Dreadwing's like, "Yep." And then he goes into the medical bay where Starscream just had his T-Cog reapplied and is like, "You there, I'm gonna kill you!" And flips out. And Knockout, quite awesomely, replies to Starscream's plea of help with, and then leaves. Which I quite enjoyed. Dreadwing has some great lines. Great vocal delivery, in fact, of what's going on. Starscream has a great like lead up of like trying to quell a situation and then realizing that Dreadwing is completely aware of Zombie Skyquake. And then Megatron comes in and goes like, "Don't make me do this." And Dreadwing's like, "I'm not just gonna listen to you." And so Megatron blows a hole through Dreadwing and Dreadwing is dead. And then Megatron has a line which has actually made me think for a little while, which is to Starscream saying, "Don't make me regret which one of you I chose to leave alive." And I've been theorizing on that a little bit, but I'll save that for later on. Gog, just flow your thoughts into what became Dreadwing's final scene in the series so far. I had a feeling
if you look at this from the bullet points, like I think there's some stuff to enjoy if you're the kind of person that reads or that watches TV by reading the Sunday morning breakdown of an outline of a show that maybe or of a blog. So let's say a blog had its weekly review for a show, and
synopsis.
It was going down and kind of listing the outline of what happened. You know, if you're the kind of person that enjoys outlines, I think that you might have enjoyed this. You know, things happen. Dreadwing, he betrays the Decepticons and gives the Autobots the only thing that could possibly put them back in the game, standing up to Megatron, who has, for all intents and purposes, mostly won this battle up until now. He heads back to the Decepticon ship, acts like nothing has changed, for the simple reason that he wants to get close to Starscream and, you know, regardless of what happens to himself, put Starscream out of his misery. And Megatron, you know, being forced to deal with a dissenting Decepticon that will no longer follow orders is forced to put him down. That sounds pretty awesome, doesn't it?
Yeah, there's conceptual pieces of it that make sense. It's like many other things in the show, which I think we've talked about now. It's all in the delivery, and that's where I kind of sort of fell short.
I agree. This whole thing felt completely flat and emotionless to me. I know people are going to disagree with me, but I mean, I can't change the way I feel, so I apologize if you're shouting at me right now of how wrong I am. That's all I can do is offer my opinion, but
it
just
felt like a tick box item.
And I didn't realize this until afterwards, cause I don't follow a lot of the interviews and stuff all the time, but you know, apparently a lot of people knew this was Dreadwing's final episode because Tony Todd had made the comment, I recorded 12 episodes for Prime and never came back to do any more.
Oh, so thank goodness I didn't know that.
Apparently this was the 12th episode that featured Dreadwing's voice actor. So I guess some people kind of knew ahead of time that this is a good chance that he might have died in this episode.
I'm so glad I didn't hear that because that would have even further diminished it for me.
Yeah. So anyway, this whole thing just seems ridiculous to me. Like, of why Megatron would choose Dreadwing over Starscream anyway. Especially the whole speech that he gave Starscream, I think last episode, where he makes the comment of, like, we all need to be united and stuff. And it's like, you can make the argument of, like, well, apparently Dreadwing didn't want to be united, so he had to get put down. But it's like, it's just a checkbox. It's just like, you can tell that going into season three that they want Starscream back by Megatron's side, and it's just, they don't have room on the roster for Dreadwing, so let's get rid of him. And it's just, you know, it's like I keep saying, and this might be totally selfish. I might be wearing my blinders, but whatever. But it's just every single time that I latch onto a character, or that this show has something going for it, regardless of all the crap that I don't like, you know, there's still something that I can find enjoyable. And every time I mention it, they yank it away. You know, it's like we went on and on about, like, how cool Breakdown's character was, and like how you could hear in his voice that despite being part of the Decepticons, that he was kind of a nice guy, and there was a little bit of fiction there, and then boom, they kill him. And I forgave that. I didn't mind it because, for one, it was shocking. Like, it really set up what could happen in this show. But it was also leading into the whole mech thing. It's like, wow, they killed a character, but it was for the sake of some really awesome potential story stuff. And that story stuff appeared in, like, one episode and was quickly destroyed again, which was one of my favorite things about the show. It really kept me coming back for more, despite some my utter unenjoyment of a large amount of the episodes in season two. You know, and it's like, even going into that, it's like, wow, you know, there's a lot of crap here, but, you know, hey, Dreadwing's still pretty cool, right? Hey, let's just, you know, knock a hole in him. And I've seen people comparing Dreadwing to Dinobot, and especially, like, his death. Yeah. Like people actually telling other people, like, well, this is kind of the same as Dinobot going out. No, in no shape, way, or form is this anywhere even close. It's just like,
no, absolutely not. Dinobot had a full episode to play that arc out. There was drama, there was tension. Dreadwing's was
it's just
a predictable, like, shock death.
Dreadwing walks in, okay, and he threatens Starscream, shoots, misses him by a long shot, hits the wall, then drops his gun. Apparently it's a gun, as we see later in this scene, that can kill any Decepticon with a single shot and blow out his spark. So he just drops the gun, picks up his sword, and just, like, plays around with Starscream until Megatron comes in and basically blasts a hole through him. And it's just, like, nothing to the scene even seemed like anything more than just a total predictable, we're going to stall as long as we can for Megatron to get in here. Like, it's just, like, nothing, like, it just felt like going through the motions for me. And it's just now continuing on through Prime, there's even less for me to hang on to in enjoying the show. And while, meanwhile, the characters that do remain on the show, and pretty much all of them, just feel completely underwhelming, unused, uncharacterful. Like I've said before, at some point seem to be even becoming parodies of themselves. And like I think every character in this show that has had something going for them, for the most part, has been just killed or just basically put to the back burner, to the point to where they're like, they just don't do anything anymore. I've really liked a lot of the stuff with RC and Jack, but it's just like, at this point, like, what does RC do other than just kind of come in and make smart comments here and there, you know? And it's like Ratchet, like, they've basically relegated Ratchet to just using his trademark lines, like, hey, ba-dum-tsh, we needed that, ba-dum-tsh. It's like, okay, like, and the large majority on the show is being based on plot that I care nothing about. And so, like, yeah, like, whatever. You, I mean, there are, in theory, some cool aspects to Dreadwing's death, but all the missed potential there of his, like, his brother and all that. Like, basically, if you want to look at what happened with Dreadwing over the course of Season 2, he appears, he's really angry about his brother, he finds out the truth about his brother, goes to do something about it, and dies. And that's it. Like, nothing there. I mean, he does some cool stuff with Optimus and kind of hinting that, you know, and I guess you could say that the whole Forge of Solas thing, but it's like this character had so much more potential than to just decide one day that he's going to be angry and then put down like a dog. Like, and from, yes, from fictional story, I think it could have worked. But given how everything else on the show on an emotional level is just falling so flat, like, no, I can't forgive the show for just doing stuff like this because it has nothing else going for it that's keeping me hooked. And yeah, this is my perspective. It's my point of view. But, like, that's where I'm coming from, and that's how I feel. And it's just, like they build up to this really cool stuff. And for me, the payoff for all the potential that we had in Dreadwing as a character was completely and totally wasted because they didn't have room for him in Season 3, or they couldn't afford, or whatever, Tony Todd, or they couldn't, his schedules didn't match up or something, so let's just kill the characters off. And this goes back to, like, the listener question we had on WTF 223, where the guy was like, you know, how cool would it be if James Earl Jones played Unicron? No, because anytime we get a celebrity to voice a Transformer, it means they're going to show up for a handful of episodes and quickly be killed off or not appear again because they can't afford it or have any desire to keep that up. It's like, look, here's a big name, right? So, I don't know. The whole thing fell flat, felt like a waste of a character. I have forgiven, as people pointed out, I have forgiven that in the past with Breakdown. With Breakdown, to me, it came like so far out of nowhere. It wasn't predictable, at least to me in the least, but it was leading into some potentially amazing stuff because it was immediately followed up with, like, yeah, Breakdown just died. His dismembered body has just been uncovered by the one organization that should never in the history or in the future of mankind get their hands on it. And oh crap, what's going
to
happen next?
Well, that definitely rolls into an ancillary topic I wanted to go into, which was because this came up with the Silas episode, how the Breakdown death. I think that the three of us all took the Breakdown death much differently than the way Silas was carried off screen or the way that Dreadwing may have been wiped out. And I was thinking about that the other day, about how Breakdown's death scene was so much different. And I think it's because it happened when there seemed to be so much potential for it. And that's why Silas's carrying off screenage really bugged me, because it felt like that was not only nullifying Silas's kind of story arc, it was also retroactively worsening the way that Breakdown was wiped off the show as well. It took what was, hey, they killed him off, but look at the potential of this. Then when that potential was snuffed out in one episode, it was like, well, now the Breakdown death is even worse, because it didn't even pay for an amazing bit of story arc. It paid for one vaguely shocking episode that ended somewhat poorly.
It would have been nice if even there was just a tag later on of something, or, you know, people were saying, hey, wouldn't it have been interesting to see Breakdown parts in the lab,
that
they're, you know, just in the back when they're doing the cortical psychic patch thing, have a Breakdown arm hanging on a wall, like it's maybe spare parts, even though that's kind of, well, I'd say before it was said kind of ghoulish, but at the same time, Megatron has just grafted arms where he wants.
And he was like, dissect the cybernetic thingamadoo. So it's like, I was in the same place. I wish there was at some point more visual evidence that ever happened.
Right. Yeah. And it's something that could be done so easily by an animator spending 20 minutes to take the model, cut the arm off the model, drop that model in the background. It doesn't have to do anything. You don't have to pause. You don't have to change the flow of anything. You just, in the pan across as they're plugging into the table in the last episode or in the previous episode, could have shown it or anything through here. Just, ah.
Yeah, and I've heard some theories, too, come up a few times, and it's nothing but theories, and there's really no evidence for it, but a lot of people have been speculating that the reason why the whole mech thing was killed off so quick, I mean, number one, going into season three, they probably just, especially now that we know that season three is only 13 episodes, they kind of decided well into the mech stuff that they didn't really have a space for that going forward. But also that Hasbro, given the fact that we really haven't gotten a breakdown figure, and they're probably tired of people asking for it. I mean, aside from the little Cyberverse, but they're kind of afraid for people or tired of people asking about it, that they just decided that to, like, no, let's just, we're not going to have that model on the screen anymore. So I don't know. I mean, who knows if that's true? And I mean, there's stuff.
Why
that
try
can
and sell toys that,
that
you're not going to sell?
Right.
It would be a really weird. Timeline to figure out, though, given how both Toy Decisions and the show's production have been going. Like,
take all those decisions would have taken place 6 to 9 months ago.
Yeah, when I don't think that was really a big factor yet. Like, it wasn't until San Diego Comic-Con, when we got the first instance of Hasbro having to actually say anything about Voyager Breakdown.
Yeah,
like the timeline of that doesn't make enough sense to me, but. Who knows? Maybe I am underestimating how fast the show can be altered. Where else is it going to go with this? I did want to say, on the bright side, I legitimately enjoyed Dreadwing's final lines. I think Tony Todd did the best acting he had done in the entire show in those moments. I felt that a lot of the mid-season 2 Dreadwing lines had been real flat, and I think that he really pumped it up and put on some real good actual just emotion and excitement. I was on the edge of my seat for a bit during that scene because I was like, man, Dreadwing is pissed off, and this is awesome. I was going over my head because I actually had this discussion with Kryn over Skype because she was like, I don't understand in any way, shape, or form why Megatron shot Dreadwing and not Starscream. And I was like, yeah, I was thinking about that for a while. And like my own theory, which is really, this is going real far. This is like halfway putting yourself in the head of a fictional character levels of going really far, is the way I see it is that Dreadwing, and this is also ignoring factors like Dreadwing needs to be off the show for non-fictional reasons, etc., etc. You got two Decepticons. One of them is going in. One of them is fiercely loyal. The other one is a sniveling backstabber who has crawled back more than once. He has done something and been punished and said, all right, I'm going to come back and do whatever you tell me, Megatron, that being Starscream. So I thought about it, and I was like, well, maybe the way that the value proposition worked out in the fictional character's head is that if Dreadwing has gone far enough to disobey an order and outright try to kill Starscream, then he is now more dangerous to keep around than Starscream, who is less loyal, but when he disobeys, he's really easy to snap back into order. So it feels like the decision was, do I take the backstabber I can handle or the fiercely loyal soldier who may have just lost the one thing that kept him in check? And I was like, okay, I can kind of make sense of it now in my head. I still think it was a real bummer to try to literally cram that entire character journey into about 10 minutes. Because we weren't even halfway through the episode and it was over. And I was like, that's where I got to say, if people are trying to say that was like Code of Hero, no, it wasn't. Code of Hero was a 22-minute episode focused almost entirely on Dinobot and his decision to have a sacrifice and his lengthy death speech and his funeral.
It also had several episodes leading up to that of character growth.
Yeah.
As far as him deciding what side he was going to take, because Dinobot, at the end, his character was conflicted. He did actually change sides and ended up coming back because his conscience wouldn't allow him to, you know, make certain choices. And even if Dreadwing only had, like, you know, 12 episodes or something, like, it just, like, there's so much more that could have been done with this character.
This was Dreadwing.
And his death have felt something with it. Like, I'm not saying that Dreadwing could not have died, but I'm saying that the way Dreadwing died is just, it felt completely hollow, and it felt like nothing more than, well, we don't need this character anymore, we're going to hit the bullet points.
Yeah, one episode ago, at the end of the previous episode, Dreadwing discovers the linchpin moment that makes him go enraged. And so that's about 3 to 5 minutes of content. And then we get 10 minutes to finish that story off in this episode. That is like, It is less than 15 minutes of a story arc that happened there. If you want to roll in a few more minutes from other episodes of him being conflicted or something or showing honor, I guess maybe you can stretch that out. But to me, the dynamic storyline of Dreadwing's decision to turn around and then his subsequent, I guess, self-sacrifice were hideously compressed. And that really took a lot of the steam out of it for me. I wasn't mad or anything. I was just like, well, okay. It was not just kind of a bummer. It was like, man, that is a waste of time, especially when we were going to go straight into this enormous battle scene later in Regeneration, which would have been a dynamic and cinematically stronger moment, at least in either the immediate before, the during, or the after. There is so much more drama, and even in the space of the 22 minutes of this episode, drama could have been taken out of having it happen in there rather than, number one, in the first 10 minutes, they off Dreadwing, and I guess just drag him away. And then, like, in the next scene, this is moving on topics, you know, along a little bit, Starscream and Knockout get into an argument, and literally are about to bludgeon each other with the Omega Keys, slam them together, and that's how they discover how they work.
And then Starscream makes the comment, like, well, that's why Dreadwing's pushing up daisies and we're not.
What?
Like,
really?
What did that have to do with anything?
Yeah. So they like the opening half of this episode just felt like this balls to the walls, like head down, arms chugging, just sprint. Like the first 15 minutes of this episode felt like this barreling sprint down the freeway of trying to get them onto Cybertron for the big action sequence. And like, not only that, like, not only Dreadwing's incredibly compressed depth and storyline and etc., the amazingly left field way that the Omega Keys are used, which, you know, I thought it was kind of funny, but in context with the rest of the episode, it ended up lending itself as a weakness. And then you also have the whole like Forge of Solus Prime thing in the Autobot base, where all that happens is these like, yeah, I gotta do some work with the Forge, cut away, cut back. Man, it's amazing what Optimus was able to do with the Forge of Solus Prime. Oh. Did you see that? That was crazy.
I would have liked to have seen something other than just Optimus saying, burp, gotta do something. Burp,
this is
going to
take a while. Because I'm like, so did he just like start pounding the space bridge with the hammer?
Yeah, he just crawled underneath it and hit it with the hammer a couple times.
And so, like, just all that kind of stuff, especially that, like, when they came back and Bulkhead's like, I can't believe how he did that. That felt like self-aware parody of how breakneck a speed this episode decided to run at from the beginning to the midpoint. And I mean, you know, it's great that they then slowed it down enough for you to realize, oh, and he's also repairing the Star Saber with the thing, which makes total sense. But up until they stepped through that space bridge, I just felt like I was watching 20 minutes of content in 10 minutes kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like it was so breakneck.
It definitely feels like between this episode and the next one, it may have been better served as a three-parter and ditch one of the useless episodes.
Yeah, like make part one.
Ditch the last episode that was more, it was not just a clip show, but it was mostly a clip show.
Well, I mean, I will stand by Patch being worthwhile.
Oh, it was, if they had taken some of these points and just run them out longer, I think we could have gotten a whole lot more out of it.
If we'd had episode one ending on Dreadwing's death, episode two ending where this one did, and episode three being the one that we got, I think it would have ran a lot smoother, to a degree, anyway. But yeah, like Regeneration literally, it runs at this barreling speed, and then, I guess up until before we get to the Cybertron stuff, was there anything in the Autobot base, or with the kids, that actually you guys wanted to expand upon at all? I didn't mean to barrel us through it much the way that the show did, but
I like the fact that the Autobots were arming up with all the relics going into the end of the episode.
Yeah, that was cool. I like that part.
It's definitely become a look, we need every resource we can get, and they're not doing some, well, it might fall into other people's hands stuff. It was really nice to see that those are going to come into play. And how it does later, just to have that be done, it felt like a positive move rather than just
a
negative move. I don't know where I'm going with that.
It felt like there was at least a semblance of payoff for all the relic
for
hunts.
All the relic hunt stuff, yeah.
Like at least we had the moment of like,
this is the final war moment. type of a deal.
Yeah, I was waiting for someone to pick up the stasis pod with Arachne and just carry it in there and just use it as like a bludgeon or something, just like hurl it at somebody. I did like the I don't want to say the reveal, but the deployment of the relics. Like if they are there, that was the time to just have everyone slap one on, and it led to some cool stuff later on. Gog, any other thoughts on the pre-Cybertron half of regeneration?
It's okay. I guess maybe like if he, I don't know. Like the whole, was it just me or did the animation seem really clunky when it has like the montage of the Autobots all standing in front of the relics and going to pick them up and then walking back out? Like it looked really mechanical. Like it was just a bunch of.
It looked video gamey when they were picking them up.
Yeah. But like them marching back out, it was like they just seemed really stiff. It was like they didn't have the same people animating it, or they were going for like, hey, everybody, this looks really cool, doesn't it? And it kind of didn't. I don't know. Like the whole part seemed really strange to me. But it's kind of in theory, it seems kind of cool that it's like, hey, all this stuff we've built up. You know, we're going to use it now. And it, like, I continue to ask myself, like, well, other than Smokescreen, you know, using the phase shifter to, you know, to great effect over, you know, the last several episodes, like, where's all this stuff been up till now? It's like, I mean, look how much trouble Starscream caused for you with the Apex armor. It appears that the only real weakness that anybody knows in the Apex armor is if your opponent has use of a phase shifter, which the Decepticons don't because the Autobots have it. So, like, why up till this point hasn't anybody used it? It's like, hey, we're just going to break all the guns out now. And, I mean, we'll get into that later. And let's just have this cool little montage of all these kind of toys being used. But I don't know. It just seems to me if like, yeah, it was cool that Optimus reforged the Star Saber, and I mean, which we all kind of knew was going to happen, I think, or assumed anyway. And like, that was cool that they upgraded their ground bridge to become a space bridge. But it's like, I don't know. It's like if Prime had use of the Forge, like, you'd think that he could have built some really awesome stuff.
Yeah, build everybody something.
Right, like, better than, like, I mean, if, and, like, maybe this war would have turned out a little better. It's just, it's kind of like that the Forge is, like, this god mode that can pretty much do anything. And it's been stated as that, and maybe it turns out that that's just legend. Who knows? But, it seems that, for the most part, that he could have made whatever he wanted. I can't remember. Did it ever hint of that the Apex armor was made with the Forge?
I don't recall.
I can't remember. I remember that
I
briefly
think in
mentioned
the books,
something about the
it
Apex
talks
armor.
About that Solus Prime made all of the other.
Does it state that in the show, though, or in the books?
Thanks. I can't remember if it was in the
I
show or not.
I don't care anyway.
Maybe it was one of those art scenes where they talk about the 13.
Yeah, I don't recall if they said who made the Apex armor or if it was just, like, reacted to as, oh, God, it's the Apex armor.
But whatever. But anyway, I don't know. Anybody else have anything to say about
I think some of that stuff they explained away as quickly as they could with Optimus's line of, I would do more, but, making new Omega keys requires an expertise I do not possess, and time is of the essence. And
okay.
I do not use contractions, blah, blah, blah. So they go on to Cybertron, and guess what? Megatron's there too, because his two loyal subordinates tried to kill each other and accidentally figured out where the Omega Lock is. By the way, there's also a thing they have to find this episode called the Omega Lock, but guess what? They find it right away. So, so they get there and they have a big pitched battle, which was pretty awesome in many respects. Had a lot of creative blocking, a lot of really creative choreography. I've often felt like if there's one thing Prime has been really steady on, it's that its action sequences, especially the larger ones, rarely get me bored unless I'm like legitimately half comatose on 3 hours of sleep. I especially liked putting RC in the Apex armor and giving like a whole new style of action blocking to that enormous model. It was really fun to watch. And I also was kind of amused by Bulkhead having the stasis stick because it looked like a toothpick in his hands. That was kind of funny. But yeah, they had this just pretty effective pitch battle. The Autobots more or less won quite handily. They even had the spark extractor get dropped out there, which was kind of dark, I thought. Like,
They were just taking out Viacons left, right, and center. It didn't matter.
Before we move into that, there is one thing, one really huge thing that I did mean to bring up before. I think it was stated before they went to Cybertron. Yeah, it was. It was in their base. They're talking about, you know, like, well, you know, what's the use of Megatron having the Omega keys if he's not going to use them? And, you know, somebody says, I think it was Prime. He's like, no, I think if Megatron gets the keys, he will use them. And Bulkhead's like, then why don't we just let Megatron reformat Cybertron? Optimus says, well, if he does that, he'll basically make Autobots out to be war criminals. So basically, this is a really interesting line, and I don't think it's necessarily bad, but it basically says we need to win this, or we need to be the one to reformat Cybertron for political reasons. Like, like straight up, it's like, we can't let the enemy do the thing we want to do because they'll make us look bad. And that's not an invalid reason, given what the way Optimus painted it. That's a very interesting line.
It made me immediately think of More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise, like the opening sequence of that
stuff.
And
basically,
it's become politics, not
and when
just
the nails
the
show
war.
Up, who's going to be the one that greets them?
Right, and that's very interesting given what happens in the battle, because straight up, Smokescreen uses the spark extractor to kill dozens and dozens of Viacons, and like all these people are, and granted, they've kind of made the point that the Viacons are, as strange as it is, they're basically just, they're supposed to be sentient individual Transformers, but they literally die every episode. But it's like lots and lots of Cybertronians lost their lives in a battle over political clout. And that's what it boils down to. And I'm not criticizing either side for that, but that's what happened in this battle.
And
it was who can appear to be the savior of their race, and that Optimus was willing to kill people, was willing to kill other Cybertronians in order to maintain political clout.
It was really sticking out to me because of the way it was treated. I distinctly recall in the episode where the spark extractor was first seen, it was treated as like a legitimately horrific device that is beneath the use of the Autobots unless it's absolutely necessary.
Bioweapon.
And didn't they
almost
use it once and then decide not to?
They tried to use
Optimus tried to use it, but he got hit with that null beam when the Nemesis went.
Right. Oh, but there was a discussion before he used it where they were like, you're actually going to use that. And he's like, it's come down to this. Like, there was enough real weight behind that for it to feel odd for Megatron to go like, bring me the something or I'll have your sparks, and Smokescreen to run up and just one line like, nah, I'll take him, and just like drop the thing down. And like Megatron even reacts with like legitimate horror of like, the spark extractor, you've gone nuts. Oh no. So it was a cool moment, but the politics thing really made me think about the nails from current IDW and just how that could have led to an incredibly interesting season 3. I say that right now because we're not talking about Darkest Hour quite yet. That actual fight sequence pretty much ends with the Autobots winning and Megatron having to chase after him as they find the Omega Lock, and through a fairly lengthy sequence have the Omega Lock rise up out of the surface of Cybertron. Then the Decepticons show up, and I thought this is kind of a neat moment. Megatron's like, I want more Viacons, and Starscream's like, we found something better. And it's like Starscream showing up in this moment of the end of season 2 is when he's finally like, yo, we should do something about those kids. Because now we know where one of them lives. And,
yeah.
That is our cliffhanger. They show up with the kids in jars. Which I think it was it in this episode's cliffhanger where they said, like, give us the keys or we're going to open the lids? Or was that the start of... Yeah, so that was the cliffhanger. Yeah.
That was and Optimus asks, what if we don't? And Megatron says, we will open it up and expose them to Cybertron's toxic atmosphere. And it ended right there.
Okay. So I think that was a cool cliffhanger. That was a nice, tense place to put an end to it. You know, clearly making this a two-parter. A very united two-parter. But the whole pitched battle leading up to that, I felt was a kind of a high point to end on this episode. It really got my attention and got me kind of going like, oh, that's cool. And kind of helped, at least when I watched it, distract from the really disappointing opening half of the episode. But how'd you guys feel about the pitched battle sequence? Gog.
You mean like the part right at the end?
Yeah, like on Cybertron, pretty much. Like they're the whole fight, the finding the Omega Lock, etc.
Like it was cool. Like again, like it feels like here's all the relics. Like remember all them relics? Like we're gonna use them all. And it's like here's one little clip of each Autobot using one of the relics. And it's like, okay, like that's neat, but. Like, why, through all the struggles that everybody's been through up until this point, like, why have you just now decided to break them out? And I, again, it's a cool bullet point. It's like, here we are, the ultimate battle for the planet. The Autobots are going to use everything that they have at their disposal. But, like, there's been a lot on the line from the first episode of season one up until now. And it just, I don't know, it felt like it didn't feel like... It felt like this was supposed to justify the rest of the season. Like, this is why we have had 20-some-odd episodes of Relic Hunt. Because this is it. The ultimate battle. And it's like, okay, we got to see Bulkhead freeze some Viacons in place. Guess what? The Autobots could have easily killed those Viacons by standing in a circle and shooting in every direction, because that's what they do every episode. I've seen episodes, I think probably previously, where nearly as many Viacons have died without the Autobots using any relics. So, you know, there's been situations where the Autobots have found themselves in positions where they would have lost, and perhaps they wouldn't have lost if they would have utilized some of these relics before, like when, you know, Knockout had the sound wave thing, and then they ended up not getting the key. You know, it's just so. It's like the payoff for the use of the relics is, hey, everybody, watch a bunch of Viacons die. But that happens every episode. So what's the difference? Like we didn't see like some awesome battle between all the core Autobots and all the core Decepticons. Like where was Knockout and Soundwave and all them doing what they do? Like, remember how awesome Soundwave was when he fought Wheeljack? Like, where's he? What's he doing? And yeah, I guess he's monitoring the kids and stuff, and that's cool, doing what he does, but, like, basically the final climactic battle of the season between the Autobots and Megatron was, let's watch a bunch of Viacons get slaughtered by relics that have been sitting in the garage for a while. You know, whereas there are some key points where they could have been used before. And again, you know, again, I guess I'm really picking the show apart unfairly, maybe, but it's like that to me, that was the payoff. Let's see a bunch of Viacons die. But we see that every episode. We've seen episodes where literally the Autobots just stand in a circle and shoot in every direction. And there are like 30 dead Viacons in a pile.
This time they got
scattered
to do
the Viacon. And this time they got to do it with a little bit more style.
Uncanned animation style.
Right. But that's it. Like that's the only thing.
Well, it's exercise. It's good creative exercise for the animators. It's tapping into one of the things that, amidst the wonky and outside force affected writing, like the show's still been able to do, is at least it delivers these cool visuals. So I'm going to give it a point on that one of like it, you know, that's playing to its strengths. Like when the show's clearly having like a tough time being able to do the plot it wants to do for whatever reason, there's been a lot of theorizing, playing to its strength of visual candy. At least it pushed it far enough there to not have the big climactic battle be just like the other ones in terms of animation and weaponry and whatnot. But did anyone? I'm not sure if this is a did anyone, but I had idea for an Apex Armor third party piece I'd like to see now is just do it with an empty ball socket socket on the head and have an attachable ball socket ball if you need to, so you can just swap in the head of RC or Starscream or anybody into that toy.
And that's where I was hoping with RC using the Apex armor that it would be a different result.
Nope.
I was like, okay, well,
pretty
Starscream
scary. It's like
couldn't
it's bounding
transform.
Around like an acrobat.
And yeah, it would have been interesting to see something that was just like maybe not quite to the level of like the Red Energon, but some sort of speed suit or something else. Instead, it was just
the Red Apex armor.
Yeah, instead it was, nope, it's the same thing. Okay, what happens if somebody like Bulkhead puts that on then? Does
it's
he
like
have some sort
tight.
Of compression issues?
It's skin tight. I imagine
that. That's why
like,
he scoffed about using it, because there's no way that it would fit. He tried it already, got angry.
Like show-wise, it's the Apex armor model, and that's why they just stuck a new head in it. But fictionally, I thought about it, and I was like, there's actually less questions to ask if the thing just deploys into one shape. I'm not going to start asking questions of why, like, where did all the mass of the Starscream version go in the smaller RC version? But
well, it all comes out of this little chest piece anyway, but...
Shh.
Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Damn it. Any other thoughts on regeneration, or should we move into Darkest Hour?
Let's go.
All right. So, Darkest Hour, you know how I was talking about Dreadwing's whole thing kind of being resolved in the opening 10 minutes?
Yeah.
So Darkest Hour kind of really quickly resolves the whole Omega Lock thing and the children thing by having this really long sequence of the Autobots going up and throwing down a relic, and taking a kid and walking away. Megatron having this weird metafictional awareness to say, with RC and Smokescreen, I think that Jack, because he caused me problems, is worth the relics of two Autobots who are also his partners. And then Bumblebee comes up. I did enjoy the whole thing of Bumblebee and Soundwave being the Decepticon and Autobot pair interchanging wrath, because it meant that Soundwave just stared at him silently and Bumblebee just went like, so there was like no banter whatsoever. So Optimus, he's already stuck to start the Star Saber in the ground. So he's like, all right, we give up. So they get the kids back, and they're like, let us take them home. And Megatron's like, nah, you don't want to do that, because I'm about to shoot this whole, like, he tests out the Omega Lock deal, and it basically resurrects a building on Cybertron. And, yeah, that's kind of cool. And I was like, yeah, I kind of like the idea that this is, like, a targeted device. You know, it's Magitech. It's using the Well of the All Sparks, but it's still technology, so it's not like you push a button, the whole planet just comes back to life. It's gonna be a rebuilding effort, I assume. Yeah, it
remembers the old palette and goes from there.
Yeah. But Megatron's like, I'm gonna take over Earth as well, and I'm gonna shoot this thing at Earth, and it's probably gonna be pretty unsafe for a human being to live on there once I've cyber-formed Earth. And the stakes are laid down that Megatron's going to turn Earth into another Cybertron, and that's going to probably wipe out all indigenous life on the planet. Random factor, bringing up on Twitter and on, you know, he's the first person I saw to talk about it in my circle of checking things. Bring up this point I didn't even consider when I was watching the episode, which is, isn't Unicron still in the core of the Earth? So yeah. What would cyberforming the planet that formed around the dark god of the Transformers exactly do? But leaving that aside, because I believe that at this point we are just supposed to assume Unicron's dead, which is a bit disappointing. So he's going to cyberform Earth, and Optimus's reaction to that is to go like, rah! And grab the sword and cut through a bunch of dudes, disarm literally Megatron in one swipe, and blow up the Omega Lock. So in the opening half of the episode, the entire cliffhanger and Omega Lock subplots are all fixed because Optimus destroys it in a fit of decision-making. Now, there's been a little bit of debate here and there about how he went about it. I felt in the episode he at least remarked upon it, and at least Ratchet, and I actually really liked Ratchet's reaction to this whole sequence of like,
yes.
Just stunned, like, not even anger, just utterly stunned, astonished, like I can't believe you are telling me you just destroyed our planet. And Optimus kind of going like, well, you know, it was a snap decision. It was either our planet or it was going to be the Earth. And I'm not going to let the Earth get hurt. And so there's actually some good drama down in there to be found if it ever gets tapped in season three. But from a
we needed that.
I let that go. from an outside perspective, it was again like, well, the Omega Lock story's done and we've got half an episode left to go. And I was watching the episode with GM Fan, who was like, can you show me the time counter? And he was laughing that the whole episode was not even half done. And I was like, well, you know, I'm okay with this in a way, because I was already really tired of this whole Omega Lock storyline. And if this means something that I'm entirely not expecting or aware of from a synopsis is going to happen, then I think I'm more interested than if this is going to be a prolonged battle for the Omega Lock, I guess.
Yeah.
But that was that and the Dreadwing thing. It's like the thing that I used to really like about Prime mutating into this kind of annoying, lingering thing of handling stuff not just fast, but so fast that you can't even really get invested in it anymore.
It's like whiplash fast.
He destroys the Omega Lock. He wrecks it, and it's like, you just cut off Megatron's arm. Couldn't you have just pushed the button and turned it off? Did you have to, like, cut it in half and blow it up and, like, take most of the planet with it or whatever? Like,
well, hitting the big red stop button was going to be too hard.
Like, I was sitting there going, like, I guess maybe there was a keyed-in sequence that would have required more work to stop, and maybe the Earth only had seconds before the cyberforming would have commenced or something. But this was a case of, like, and I've said this before, I think it is a weakness when it is up to the viewer to fill in this many gaps. Leaving some gaps for the viewer to fill in is fine. It can even be a very effective way of storytelling. But leaving things so just fast-paced and glazing over details, I think ends up being a weakness, because then you just have a bunch of people coming up with their own theories, or you have people quite rightfully going like, that left a huge hole, and I don't know what fills that hole. And then you get people loudly arguing their personal theory because they want to be the one who figured it out. And it's just unfortunate, and it is really kind of just dramatically nullifying to a degree. Now, I mean, granted, I would be saying this all a lot more harshly if we did not move into Ratchet's scene immediately afterwards, which felt like a semblance of dramatic payoff. And I really liked Ratchet's reaction to this whole thing of just, he has nothing good to say about it. He's not going to take any of the excuses. He's like, I don't, look, end of the day, you've ruined the chance for our home planet to survive so that you could save this planet that we're not even from. And mm-hmm. I like that they at least highlighted that judgment call and that I guess, you know, the Walking Dead style, you've got the meter dripping down, you got to pick choice A or choice B kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there's some good in there, but the bad that's in there is almost indefensible at the same time. And it's just weird to look at. And it's interesting to see people's different reactions, because I've seen a wide variety of reactions. And it's I don't know, it's interesting in that it's so talkable, but it's a bummer because it's at the expense of a really solid finale almost. I don't know, I guess the first talking point would be the resolution of the Omega Lock and Ratchet's reaction, Optimus's reasoning, that the plot point that is the opening minutes of the episode. Gog, what are your thoughts on how Darkest Hour opened up?
I think the highlight of the scene for me was the Ratchet bit. It felt legitimately emotional there. Like, Ratchet doesn't know what's going on. He doesn't even know the kids are there. Like, you know, June calls him and says, hey, have you heard from Jack? Ratchet's like, nope, I got other stuff going on right now. I don't have to worry about some kids. I'm sorry. You know, he didn't even know they were there. So when they walk in, he sees the kids in the jars. Bulkhead tells him that the Omega Lock got destroyed. He's just like, what in the hell just happened? Like, I thought you guys were just going over there to revive Cybertron and coming back. That was probably the highlight of the episode for me, was that, because he was asking some legitimate questions. And I agree with you that I think the whole thing was it just happened way too fast. Like there was a lot of potential there for some really good moments. I guess it could possibly come up in season three, but given the track record of this show, I doubt it. I mean, I'd be surprised if this really gets dealt with on any meaningful level. I think after this, and it's possible, but I'm not holding my breath. But no, it was that was good stuff. I agree with you about with Optimus. It was like when he just hit the Omega Lock, I'm like, wow, really? Like that seemed like a pretty harsh judgment. And I guess given the choices and the time limitations and the consequences of everything that was going on, I could understand why he made the decision he made. Like, and yeah. I wouldn't even necessarily boil that down to bad writing. But what I would like to see in order to justify that is the consequences, and maybe Optimus even later on, if he's even going to be in season three, which we'll talk about later. But like, you know, if the opportunity comes up, I would like to see with maybe him even struggling with that a bit of like, maybe I did make the wrong decision, or maybe I should have tried something else, and people holding him accountable for that. Cause this isn't like a Battlefield thing where it was like, you know, he just made a quick decision like, well, let's retreat or let's do something now. And people are like, well, I wouldn't have done that, but whatever, you know, we're all here and everybody's fine. And, you know, tomorrow nobody's going to care about it. But I mean, this was their home planet. The only part about Ratchet's bit that I found a little weird was, you know, Ratchet making the comment about like, well, what have we fought for? All the blood and all the energon spilled and lives lost and everything up to this point, it's all for nothing. But they didn't know until about four episodes ago that Cybertron could even be revived.
So yeah.
That was the part that was a little weird to me. It was like, well, you were fighting just fine before you knew that happened. So, you know, I don't know. That was a little weird. I mean, it would have been, I think, a little cooler if they knew that there was a possibility that, or they knew the existence of the keys or something for a while. And I don't know. But that was a little, I thought that part was a little bit strange. But, I mean, that part was good. I agree that I think Optimus was a little quick on the trigger finger. It would have been, I think, nice if some of the other Autobots weren't necessarily as accepting of the decision as, like, maybe RC and Jack. We got a little hint of that maybe with Bulkhead. I can't remember everything Bulkhead said in that scene off the top of my head.
He had a real tone of the boss. It's the boss's call, and I'm going to stand by that. But he had a real, like, his audible tone was like, I kind of can't believe that just happened.
Right. I mean, because he kind of dropped it down harshly when Ratchet was like, what happened? And Bulkhead basically said very coldly, Optimus just destroyed the Omega Lock and left it at that. He didn't say he was forced to. He's like, Optimus destroyed the Omega Lock. And Ratchet's like, are you effing kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, what? So, I don't know. Like, and maybe, you know, maybe that is something that will come up in season three where now that people have had a chance to think about what happened, maybe people are going to be like, wow, maybe there was another way or something. But like I said, I'm not holding my breath that it seems to me to be kind of the setup for what's going to happen in season three versus any type of continuing storyline over the consequences of that.
Still, all points to Jeffrey Combs for a great performance in that scene. That was that was a good high point. Aaron, what are your thoughts on that opening of the episode?
It just had a few quibbles. One of them was just the fact that why does June Darby have the same incoming message ability that Optimus Prime has to the main switchboard?
Well, she has to call to check up on her kid.
Well, I know, but doesn't Ratchet have caller ID or ringtones or anything like that? I don't know. It just seemed kind of odd that Ratchet would mistake an external cell phone call for a internal Autobot transmission. Just some of those things. It's like, did anybody... It kind of sounds bad, but does anybody think about that? You know, it's just the fact that, you know, why isn't it, you know... You see her call, and then Ratchet finally answers, like, no, I can't talk to you right now, rather than like, Optimus? Optimus? Is that you?
Well, here, oh, ask, no, wait ask a second. It's a cell phone call. Ask me the question if anyone thinks about that.
No, they didn't.
Yeah.
Did anybody think about it?
No.
Okay. And I did like the idea of the Omega Lock being a repair beam of some sort, because if you think about the way that the mythology kind of runs, is the fact that, you know, Cybertron has been Cybertron as it is. So it's, you know, the fact that that's like a reset button rather than necessarily a cyber forming thing, although then it appears to try and do that to the Earth as well. As the what is upcoming, then, you know, it's I don't know where it kind of goes for me for that. Then it's like, okay, well, it's designed to reformat, but then why does it reformat the same thing the same way? I don't know. It's a thing that seems like it could have a different device. Then why is it called a lock?
Because you unlock
the... Other than it had to have keys.
Yeah. It unlocks the...
It was like, we have cyber keys from another show. Okay, we want to keep that term for no real good reason. But let's... Key has to go in a lock.
No, the Omega Lock was from Cybertron. The Omega Lock was the thing that
came with... Oh, yeah, I guess there was the Omega Lock. It's the thing that came... Yeah.
Came with the Primus toy.
So we've got these terms. So how do we make that work? I don't know. If it's a nod or terminology that works, I think it's great to reuse it. But if it's just like we have this word sequence that needs to be reused, so let's reuse it.
Hmm. Well, it's like I said, it's the whole sequence, that the whole opening thing. It's discussable. And like GOG, I think my main hope is, I mean, this is a little bit referential to current IDW comic continuities, but I would love it if there are repercussions for this in Season 3, yeah, along the lines of non-aligned indigenous life forms showing up and going like, hey, so what happened to Cybertron? And people going like, well, Optimus Prime destroyed the only chance of saving it, and having all these non-aligned people have to start coming to terms with, like, you know, hearing parts of the story, hearing the full story, and deciding how they're going to react to that.
Yeah, I will say there is one thing that I want to bring up now that I think about it, and I forgot it until just now, but I remembered it when I was watching this episode a second time. Like the whole Megatron must be stopped no matter the cost. Like this the end of this fight is complete BS. Like we, especially when you compare the Optimus to the end of Season 1, where he basically makes the speech that Megatron has to die. Like he has to die. Like, if Decepticons step out of my way, if they won't fight, I won't hold them accountable for Megatron being their leader, but I'm going to have to put Megatron down. It is for the safety of everyone on both Earth and Cybertronian everything. And we had seen that come up before where, you know, Optimus was willing to live with that decision. But here we are at the end of the battle. Megatron just destroyed the Omega Lock. You know, the kids are pretty much safe. The ground bridge is open. The Autobots are carrying them to safety. Optimus has the Star Saber. Megatron's arm has just been cut off. He can no longer fight or break the Star Saber with his dark purple Star Saber. The Decepticons are basically there. Like they can. This war could be ended right now. Like it could be over. Megatron could just walk over to Megatron and kill him. Optimus just walks through the space bridge. Everything that happens after this point is his fault. The fact that their base gets destroyed. The fact that Megatron and the Decepticons are have a giant fortress now in Jasper, Nevada. Like everything after this is Optimus's fault. Like he literally just hears all the Decepticons they're stunned, they're breathing, they're coughing through the dust. They don't know what just happened. They can't believe it. Optimus could have ended this right now, and I think it's pretty inconsistent with how Optimus has been portrayed. You know, since then, where he's several times he's had Megatron to where he could kill him, and for some reasons he couldn't. Like, what was the I can't remember the name of it. Crossfire, I think, the one where they have that was where Breakdown died, And then Arachnid had the Insecticon, and Megatron was greatly weakened by the Insecticon. And Optimus had him at gunpoint, and the only reason why Optimus didn't shoot him through the head is because Dreadwing showed up with about 75 billion Viacons.
Right,
and
I remember that. It's in the volcano.
And so Optimus was charging his blaster about to put a wounded and incapable of fighting back Megatron out of his misery. So Optimus had already made the decision, which was a right one. And like I said, there are definitely struggles because, and that was an emotional scene as well, because Optimus had just given the speech about how they shouldn't have killed Starscream because he was weak and pathetic, but how Megatron was so the implication there that Megatron was so exponentially more dangerous and shouldn't be given that second chance that the Decepticons were worthy of getting as individuals. And here we are, the Decepticons defeated, their ultimate plan to wipe out the Earth or whatever has just been stopped, and Megatron is sitting there with his God Mode Starsaber that in past episodes we've seen can knock the freaking warship out of the sky with a single blast. The Decepticons are there at his mercy. He turns his back and walks away through the space bridge and says, "Oh, well, I guess we're live to fight another day." It completely inconsistent with the rest of the way that this Optimus has been portrayed, and everything after this happens as a consequence because of this. So there you go. And I really don't see many ways that could be refuted. Feel free if you have a good way, but given how Optimus is up to this point, I mean, yeah, you can make the claim, well, you wanted to get out of there as quick as possible. No. We've seen Optimus put his foot down and say Megatron has to die. And he gave the big speech the last episode, Megatron has to be stopped no matter the cost. Apparently not, you know. Apparently not. You doom your planet, but at least it could have been at some good where now Megatron was down. Yeah, you just lost the ability to reform out your planet, but this freaking warlord who's going around trying to commit genocide is gone. Along with all of his top lieutenants.
He tunnel vision, right? He cut at Megatron. He saw a thing come off. He probably thought it was his head, and just kept going.
It's totally with GOG here. There's so many times that Prime has had just that I've got to do this mentality and speech, and then he goes out and has this opportunity. There's no. Yeah, everything that happens afterwards is on Prime. I don't think that there is an argument to that. I mean, it is.
Well, let's talk about what happens after that. The strange, kind of left fieldy, but I didn't really mind it because it looked cool thing of. Because the cyberforming was going on for a few seconds, now there's an entire fortress chilling out right outside the Autobot base. Fort Decepticon, or whatever.
New Kaon,
yeah, it had a name. Fort Decepticon.
Fort Decepticon.
So Fort Decepticon arises. Apparently Megatron was able to, because he knew where their base was, he was able to key in a location and have Fort Decepticon get built right outside their base. I felt a slight disconnect at how all that worked out, because I think because it was so unclear exactly what a cyberforming process even entailed. But I was like, whatever, because now we've got Megatron. He's still missing an arm. Apparently he's so hardcore, he doesn't need the other arm. And he's giving a speech. I thought it was kind of cool, because he was giving this speech, which was a bit of that politicking coming into play, of basically saying, like, Optimus Prime is responsible for the death of our homeworld. Let's go, and we're going to take this one for ourselves. Let's go show him who's boss. By the way, the writers know Transformers animated, so now I'm going to say Decepticons transform and rise up, which was kind of cool to hear. That's one of my my favorite additions animated brought to the franchise, was a phrase for Megatron, which was kind of cool. And we also get to see the Silver Viacon, which was the most oft-blown spoiler in this episode. I didn't actually manage to make it past turning my computer on before I was seeing actually direct messages of, yo, just so you know, no spoilers, but the Viacon General shows up in the last... I was like, oh, thanks, that's not a spoiler, telling me that the... Like, I think that a lot of people still don't understand how that works. I've come to that conclusion over the last few weeks. There are people who do not comprehend how it works. Let me lay it out for you. If you're posting spoiler tweets on your own Twitter feed with no @ signs, then it's on me to not read it. If you put @ someone's name, hey, just so you know, or hey, did you see, or etc., etc., when it's been a 52-week proven process that person does not see the episode as soon as it airs. It is, in fact, on your shoulders to not direct message somebody to tell them about a thing. Just venting there for a second.
Yeah. Well, even if you're adding, it should be, if you're going to talk about it to somebody, be direct messages, because if GOG @ Vangelis, I follow both of them, so I'll still see it.
Yeah, but he's
it,
not going to do it, because he understands how this works.
Right.
I mean,
right,
if
but
you,
I'm,
if you
I'm
DM
saying the
somebody,
people in this current conversation right here.
Well, no, I mean, but my point is, like, I need to check my at mentions on Twitter, because I use Twitter to talk to people who are not into Transformers as well.
Yeah.
Maybe I should make a different Twitter account. I don't know. But, like, just, I mean, I maybe I'm expecting too much that I figured people who listen to Primetime would get that I don't get the hub, but, yeah, this is all going to be forgotten by the time season 3 comes around, but I needed to vent a little bit, because, yeah, I was watching this episode entirely aware that we'd see another kind of Viacon, so I saw he was silver and black, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not surprised at all, because someone already said we're going to see a friggin' thing. But on the bright side, it led to this whole big sequence of attacking the Autobot base, and Prime basically going, like, we've all got to go our separate ways, everyone's got to get out of here now. Don't worry, Fowler will handle them outside. And I was like, what? Really? You're going to leave? Okay, sure. Fowler
one
and his magic
helicopter. Yeah.
Yeah, we can leave him to it. I mean, granted, Wheeljack shows up, which is cool. It's great that Wheeljack came back and had a logical interjection into this episode. But, like, the whole notion of Fowler handling it, I was like, now Fowler has been a badass this season several times. He had the awesome... even in this episode, there's a throwaway line of their little kind of military relationship, you know, him and Bulkhead. But Fowler in his little helicopter versus an army of Viacons and Starscream and the Nemesis, I was like, I guess you guys are accepting that Fowler's probably not going to survive that fight. Spoiler, Fowler survives that fight. But yeah, there's just a lot of cool stuff in there. June shows up in her car at the worst possible time. Fowler then loads her into his helicopter and goes back into the fray, which was really funny.
Let's get the civilian into a more dangerous situation.
Because I thought he was going to leave with her, but then he's like, he's still hovering around there. And June's like, yeah, let's go get them. I'm like, real? Okay, sure. maybe someone should tell Fowler, maybe Fowler, if he was aware, should tell her, like, no, Jack's teleporting away, he's fine. Maybe you should leave. But yeah, we got this pitched battle. It was a really cool pitched battle. And all the Autobots are going their separate ways, and it's their darkest hour because the Autobot base is going to fall. And, you know, Ratchet can't believe that things are ending the way that they're ending. And it's cool. I liked how somber it became at the end. And then, of course, we lead into the cliffhanger, which is that the Autobot base is blown up. Prime is about to smash the space bridge with the Star Saber, and our last... moment is Prime's mangled arm sticking out of the flaming wreckage of the base, which is implying that Optimus Prime is dead. So, I will say right up front, as an ending to a season, I actually did like this, as a season ender, as a season cliffhanger, as a darkest hour, like the last half of this episode, much like Regeneration, like we had a strong last half. It's like Regeneration failed to pay off the promise of the end of the episode previous, but set up a really cool new promise. Then Darkest Hour kind of didn't pay off all that well on the promise that was really cool in Regeneration, but introduced this new, interesting, cool promise. You know, we'll see how it goes in season 3. But this was as far as a way to end a season on a downer, on a major downer that leaves the audience going like, oh, what's going to happen? I thought it was pretty cool. I think that the way it was directed, the dramatic tension of the Nemesis about to go all ID4 on the Autobot base, it was neat. You know, there's cool stuff in there. Seeing silver jet Viacons, hey, cool, Takara Tomy's got a new toy to sell. That's awesome. They looked okay, and I didn't mind them. It was a cool, again, it was cool visual candy and some real intense, entertaining storytelling that ends on a cliffhanger that, you know, now at the end of season 2, I admit I'm not feeling all that super excited about seeing how it pays off, because I'm like, oh, there's all kinds of ways this could pay off. But anything I think of is probably going to be dealt with in about 10 minutes, maybe an episode and a half, since it's going to be a season premiere. So I'm just going to hold my hands up and go like, I don't know. Well, I'm just gonna be in blissful ignorance of anything until the premiere of season three, and I'm probably gonna be real interested to watch the season three premiere. I am interested to see how this plays out, but I'm not quite as excited as I was at the end of last season. Although, if anything is proven, it's A, Prime's season finales are always bad news for Optimus, and B, Prime does know how to deliver a real big, oh no, what's going to happen kind of season finale. So they got those writing chops down as far as the drama goes. But I'm curious how you guys felt about the way the episode ended. Aaron, how'd you feel about the invasion and decimation of the Autobot base?
I did like the way that they set it up to have some like individual stories for the start of season three. Because if you watch the map as they went out, it was like one went to New England area, one went to Midwest. I think the other one was West Coast or something. So they're all spread out and seem to be just on the run now because for whatever reason, I don't know. I guess they would have left all of the relics behind, or they got destroyed. No,
they left the relics behind on Cybertron, is how I took it.
Yeah, or they got destroyed by the giant explosion due to the Star Saber. Mm-hmm. So now they don't have any advantages, and somehow they've got all of these magic white Viacons out of nowhere.
Yeah, where did this
potentially the Armada? This is another place where I would have liked a line about this.
I was watching all those Viacons show up, and I was just like, I guess they cyber formed out of Fort Decepticon when it rose up out of the ground. Maybe it came with Viacons. Like, that's all I could figure out. I was like, why have we never seen these guys before? And why do they not seem to represent anything special other than their color scheme?
Other than they look like shattered glass versions of a Viacon, because they're silver and red.
Yeah, and their distinguishing feature is that they still die just as fast.
Yeah, and they all of a sudden have a whack load more of Insecticons now as well. I don't know. It just seems like it would have been nice to say that, with Kaon, I see we have new followers. Or so, again, it would have been nice to be able to have another 10 minutes of storytelling, 15 minutes of storytelling between these two episodes, to just that little bit of fluff out that could make some of these, like, why does it need to be a whole bunch of white Viacons now instead of just more of the same jet Viacons that we had before? What's the reason behind this, other than Takara needed a reason to sell another jet Viacon? I don't know. That was a big thing that caught me. And then a lot of people have been saying Wheeljack's dead too, but
no death. Yeah,
especially not an explosion. It went behind a mesa and didn't even have a boom. It was just smoke trail, and then Starscream was saying, what was it? And that's how you wreck a wrecker.
if they somehow do decide, even though he has a new toy coming for Beast Hunters, if they somehow decide that that's going to be the end of Wheeljack, that would suck, but I'm not actually not going to be surprised. It seems, at this point, like something that would not have me agog to see occur. But you know, at the same time, it doesn't seem very likely that that's how they'd kill him off, given that...
Yeah.
I mean, granted, Breakdown's a toy in Beast Hunters as well, but he's a Legends toy. It's different.
Yeah. There are so many of these things that seem, like I said with the last episode, like it was tick boxes. Mm-hmm. That it would have been nicer to see more of anything. Like, how do we know that that's necessarily Megatron Citadel, other than it's pointy and the Nemesis or whatever flies in over top of it and Megatron aimed it? Because it looked like before with the Omega Lock that he just like pushed a button and it aimed at something and reformatted the building as a nice smooth building, not like he picked Decepticon pointy for building selection on a knob somewhere. It was just another set of beep, beep, boop, and and Space Bridge, and away we go.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It, that, and then just the lack of necessity of Prime to stay behind. Because surely we know that Transformers have Demolition's technology. You know, we saw Dreadwing do it all the time. Why couldn't they set some sort of charges around the space bridge controls if that's the only reason why Prime stayed behind, other than some sort of captain the sinking ship type of false honor?
Yeah, I mean, that, I took it as like, you know, we don't want them to track you guys. We don't want them to know where everyone's escaped to. Maybe Prime's idea was he would smash the space bridge and then like jump through it right before it died out or something, and it was cut off by the ID4 beam.
Yeah, like, I don't know. It just, there are a lot of places where it seems like I see for the story why things were done, but it doesn't seem from the character's perspective like it's something that would be intelligent.
Yeah, it's weird. It's again one of those cases where at least if we had a few more little blanks filled in. I mean, at least in this case, it has the excuse of the high tension, time limit, high drama, end of season kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But it does kind of just like, if it leaves you going like, well, why did he just chill out there? And it's like, we got to come up with reasons for it. Again, it's like, to a point, I like having to come up with reasons for stuff, but only to a point, and then eventually it becomes quite a weakness when you got to keep figuring out reasons for a show why things are happening.
There is a time and a place where, you know, things have to happen for a reason, but these last couple episodes have just been consistently people playing against their established ideas and then being like, you know, like God was saying with Prime, you know, we must take every opportunity to do this except for this opportunity and that opportunity. And well, it's kind of getting late in the day and, you know, 4:30 is coming up.
We don't want to be here all night.
Yeah. You know, it just, so much was good about that kind of parting scene. Cause it did have a nice bit of sadness to it. The fact that, you know, we're breaking up the band.
It's the end of our little world.
It's the end of a whole lot of little worlds. You know, it's no longer this fun thing that we get to do, but now it's something crazy and serious. And you know, we have to go into hiding. And it would have been, it could have had the similar impact to have Prime get out of there too, other than the fact that they wanted to have Prime die.
Mm-hmm.
To that point, I maybe would have almost liked to see him die, just going toe to toe with Megatron, and instead of like the ID4 beam. Other than the fact that the ID4 beam allows anything to happen at the start of season 3. Oh, that's just Prime's arm. We know that's not something fatal. Or
if it really is just Prime's arm, and he just wandered off armless out of the wreckage, it's going to be such an anticlimax.
Yeah.
Like, to have this whole 360, like, fake dolly shot panning through the flames to show Prime's arm sticking out of the rubble, and then, like, season 3, start on that shot, move the camera 10 feet to the left, and armless Prime's just walking off. Like, yep.
Armless Prime walks over, picks up his arm, and takes off. Yeah, I mean,
good thing they didn't see me.
Yeah. He got the phase shifter somehow when he ran over to grab the Star Saber.
It landed on him, and he phase shifted through
Through
the pyramid. There's another question that this all begs, but I'm going to save it until it may need to come up. Gog, how'd you feel about the end half of this episode? The invasion, the decimation, the splitting of the band, the cliffhanger?
I will say that I think it's pretty amazing that Fowler's little whirly bird helicopter can take direct blasts from Insecticon blasters. And it just lose a door in smoke, but still totally able to fly. Meanwhile, the Autobots are continuing to blast Insecticons out of the air with single shots. I always get a kick out of it. It's another thing. Like, I know that this is a cartoon, but seriously, it's just so convenient. Like, there are scenes where literally dudes get shot at near point-blank range, and it just bounces off of them, and then the next episode, like, everything is killing people in one shot. Like, whatever. I don't know. But I thought it was a little weird how Optimus thought that it was supposed to be of some value to just randomly send Autobots and their partners to, like, random places around the globe, I guess. Like, why not just send them all through so they can remain as a team and have each other's backs? Like, I don't get it. Like it's just like, hey, we're going to send you to different places, and now probably that's going to be a great opening to season three. Everybody's split up. They have no idea where each other are.
Yeah, like, I can come up with a reason why, but it's like I just said, that's me filling in yet another gap that I'm kind of tired of filling. Like, I can in a few seconds come up with a reason that makes me okay with it, but I don't want to have to start going around explaining that to more people.
Right, but it just I don't really see any way where that makes sense, because I understand the whole let Optimus stay behind and make sure that everybody gets through safe, and then the space bridge is destroyed so that no one can track them, and he's going to make the sacrifice to make sure the troops get away. Like, I get that. That's cool. But the whole arbitrary, let's split up everyone and send everybody around, you know, to the different parts and split them up, that makes them weaker as a team. Like, that's not a wise decision.
Especially Ratchet. Hey, Ratchet, go off by yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're the military guy, so, or the medical guy. So, for everybody, you know, anyone who needs help, I guess you got to find Ratchet. He might not even be on the same continent as you. Good luck.
Especially with no space bridge after the fact.
Yeah. If this Optimus is dead, I don't care. Like, I really don't care. Like, this is one of the worst incarnations of Optimus Prime I think we've ever gotten. He's done a few things that have really made me raise an eyebrow and been like, okay, let's see how this goes. But for the most part, he's boring. He's uncharismatic, or I'm sorry, uncharismatic or whatever.
Oh dear.
Yeah. You know, it's just like, I feel no love for this character at all. He's just, and I mean, they've even gone so far to justify it in the show. Like, yeah, he has no personality. He does nothing that's fun. But that's his job. But it doesn't make for great entertainment.
I don't think this is the worst Optimus I've seen. But
I'm exaggerating. I admit it is hyperbole. But
I tend to look at this Optimus more so as a kind of a piece of set dressing or something that comes with the show, rather than one of the organic characters I want to follow. He's a necessary character who is something that the others bounce off of, and I feel like they've really sacrificed him for that sake.
I did exaggerate, but, I mean, then again, I forget Movie Prime, and then I would take Prime over Movie Prime any day.
I want them to meet. I want to see, like, the what if where Movie Prime's in these situations. Like we've got to deal with the children. So he just cuts all the pods in half, kids inside, their legs fall off, and then he just sticks the Star Saber through Megatron's face. He's like, problem solved.
What?
You know what? I think Movie Prime would have done a better job in this season finale. I think if somehow, like, one of the Universal Singularities showed up and was able to, like, switch them places for a day, and Movie Prime's like, oh, I'm on cleanup duty today, and goes through and just literally, like, removes the heads of all the Decepticons and makes a necklace out of them, and then they swap them back, and everybody's like, what?
Can you imagine Movie Prime with this universe's Star Saber?
Yeah.
Like, he'd just walk in entire continents. He'd go to an entire country, a fascist-controlled military country.
He would have it would have been like Diebuster. He would have just cleaved the entire planet in half.
Yeah.
Like, if Cybertron's dead, you might as well make it count. And the whole planet just, like, separates into, like, hemispheres.
And then he comes back and he's like, so, Nest, who are your current enemies across the globe? Like, well, there's this dictator in the Middle East. Excellent. He goes to the Middle East, cuts the Middle East in half. Comes back, he's like, I fixed it. This is this huge canyon through the entire continent of Middle Asia.
And then he would have shown up and Fowler was there, and he's like, what can I do to serve your government?
Like, just stay over there.
Fowler's like, just giving him the doe eyes of like, Optimus is just like covered in blood from the Middle East. He's like,
yeah. So,
oh, Movie Optimus, I can't wait to see your back.
Yeah. But anyway, it's like, again, like, I feel like this would have been a great end for the most part. I mean, there are a few things, again, with the whole Starscream thing coming from this just Energon puddle licking nothing of just accomplishing nothing the entire series to him being completely and fully embraced by Megatron to the point to where Megatron is now killing his second in command lieutenant to save Starscream's life, and now apparently Starscream has like his own colored armada. It's like,
yeah.
This makes no sense to me at all. Like, why? Like, Starscream is now like the prized child of Megatron. Like, where did this come from? Like, he hasn't done anything yet other than just lick his boots, and all of a sudden, like where were the? I don't get this. Like, he has like his own personal like assault squadron. Like, what? It came out of nowhere. Like, I don't get any of this. Like, what is happening with Starscream? It's just like they just decided to flick a trigger and say, we need this reset. We need this reset right now. But it's reset so far in the opposite direction that it is, I cannot believe that what I'm seeing is happening on any type of fictional level. I can't buy it. I can't buy it when I'm watching this show of what is happening with Megatron and Starscream.
I mean, at least we know we have future episodes, and as unhopeful as I am, at least there is a chance of at least a throwaway line of some kind. Yeah, there's a grand scheme in place.
That's all I'd really like, or really want to make a lot of this stuff line up better, is just a line, or something in the background, or some acknowledgement that things have changed and not been explained.
Yeah. I mean, fingers crossed. We'll see what happens with that. Yeah. So I have a question for you guys. Do you think what is the possibility that they are going to use the ID4ing of the Autobot base to pretty much finish the job and go like, oh, and by the way, Arachnid blew up in the explosion too?
Arachnid will be forgotten about.
I think she'll pop up or something. Because yeah, I think it's gonna be like her stasis pod is in the rubble and she wakes up.
Yeah, I don't think she's gonna be dead from this, but I was sitting there kind of going like, this would be a way to deal with things if there is actually a big reason why they can't get Arachnid back in the show for perhaps voicing reasons. Like there is now a big wide opening for that to happen, but we're not gonna know until a couple months from now. Yeah, I don't know. I guess just the, you know, cool season finale, but its weaknesses are more so part of a larger problem, which is what I'd like to go into to some degree, and also the things that I think worked. I kind of want to just talk about really quickly this thoughts on season two on the whole. And I'm kind of just going on the off the cuff here. There's parts of the middle of season two I'm sure I'm forgetting, but you know, my bullets on season two would definitely be like a super strong opening scenario. Which was resolved kind of fast. Unfortunately, the resolution was making way for a big, long hunt for MacGuffins, some of which were quite memorable in their delivery, had some pretty good episodes here and there, but also a lot of episodes that were just kind of like, well, we're going to keep going. We had a lot more character death in this season, opened up with so much potential, and all the potential from every character sacrifice in this season just fell flat for me. A lot of it just collapsed on its face, and I feel like it came off as flat at worst, or outright just casting off things that were unwanted. I don't know. It was disappointing. Breakdown's death had the promise of a really cool mech story. That mech story was resolved incredibly fast twice. We had one episode with Nemesis Prime. That ended, and I was like, wow, this could go somewhere really cool. We had the Psy last episode. That ended, and you know, we shared our thoughts on it, and that retroactively just made me really not into, well, if we lost Breakdown for that sucks. And Dreadwing's death, as we just went over, you know, cool idea, great bullet points, but much like the Star Wars prequels, cool ideas, delivery not so much, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, great cliffhanger again, much like season one. And honestly, a great allegory I can draw here would be the Colin Hanks season of Dexter. Great promise, great actors, really cool moments. In just confusingly poor writing at times. strangely flat, even though I was watching every episode, and then a really cool cliffhanger at the end, which makes me, you know, want to see the next series, but I definitely can't say that I felt Prime Season 2 was a great ride. It's, you know, it's much like that the Colin Hanks season of Dexter, you know, for those who have seen it. Great actors in that thing, great story concepts, but just so much flat delivery, and then what became just such prolonged plot points for no reason, and then a really cool cliffhanger out of nowhere. So I didn't dislike Season 2, but I don't feel season... I think Season 2 was a misguided season. Its main overarching plot point, that of the Iacon Records, was just very wonkily delivered. And, you know, we've had now the debates, you know, with more writers doing interviews and people inferring things here and there. You know, Season 2 felt more so than Season 1, like there was a desire to write something and a mandate to write something that did not gel perfectly with the desire to write something to me. Dog, what about you? What are your thoughts on Season 2 overall?
Oh, man. Well, like, when we wrapped up Season 1, I was, you know, my main thing was there's not, like, a real direction that this show is going, but loved the characters. I thought there were some great moments. They were setting foundation for stuff that could be built upon later. And I was left really impressed. I felt like the show had a good direction, or at least a good amount of possible directions it could go in, based off of, again, mostly just the characters that we got. And, like, my main desire was, you know, Prime doesn't really seem to have a direction, and it kind of had something at the end there with the Unicron thing, but that kind of seemed to be resolved really quickly. But now that we have these characters, we know who they are. We have the potential, once they're given something that they can do, I think this show can be absolutely terrific. And then, like, the majority of Season 2, like, there were bits and pieces of stuff that I was absolutely fascinated with, you know, like the whole Starscream thing in the beginning, the first few episodes, the introduction of Dreadwing and the kind of hints there that his honor might push through, you know, and he might show something more than just being a Decepticon watchdog, which, you know, again, reading the bullet points, you can say that that happened. It just fell completely flat to me. Lots of really amazing buildup, like the mech stuff, the possibility of Bulkhead permanently being like a cripple, which I think would have been amazing for the character stuff in that. Like, this show knows how to set stuff up. It knows how to put characters in some really unfortunate positions. It just is not willing to allow them to deal with the consequences of that. The entire season, you know, when we went into Season 2 and the whole, like, let's decode the Iacon database, like, kind of hints that this might stick around for a few episodes. Never for the life of me would I have believed that the entire season, from start to finish, would have revolved around these. I mean, and I don't know, like, how I would have felt if that's what I was told. And, like, every time we'd go through an arc, I'm like, well, I'm kind of glad that's over, only to just be pushed into the next one of the exact same thing. But, like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I don't know if I want to record Primetime anymore. And it, the way it stands right now, I don't think that I should. I've listened to podcasts where the hosts get so disenfranchised with the source material that it's no longer entertainment of any means. And I certainly think that it's legitimate to hold something accountable for the mistakes that you find. But, like, at what point do you have to say that if you're not enjoying it? Like, do people? I mean, just listen to, you just go back and listen to the last few episodes of Primetime and just listen to what I've been. And there's, like, the show is going to have to pull off a miracle for me to not have this attitude every week. And it's just like, I've kind of completely fallen out of love with the show. Every interesting bit of the characters that I've legitimately loved, and I think at times I've even been apologetic for. I just feel completely burned, like by what little investment I've had in the show and the way that I've defended it to its critics. You know, as far as like, you know, like, well, you know, there's really good possibility of some amazing things happening, and there's time after time again, nothing amazing happening at all, and the show just constantly taking the easy way out, giving us the most generic storylines, building up some absolutely amazing situations for these characters to be in, and then doing absolutely nothing with them. Even the last few remaining characters that really had me hanging on with the show, they literally just kill in the most unmeaningful way possible. And it's that's my problem. But at the same time, like, I don't know if it's fair for me to show up every week and just whine about how the show isn't doing what I want it to do. Like, I mean, I've kind of made my point, but I just don't think that there's any reason for anyone to want to continue hearing me talking about the show, because like at this point I feel, and I that's kind of me putting my money where my mouth is too, because for two seasons, I've heard the same people over and over and over again say Prime sucks. I'm done with Prime. And they keep coming back and watching, and they keep going in the same threads every week saying how the show sucks, how they're done with it, and they keep coming back. And it's pretty hypocritical for me if I, you know, tell people that, you know, if you're done with it, you should be done with it. And then for me to continue coming on the show every week and telling everybody how I think it sucks. So, like, you know, I don't think that I should participate in this discussion anymore, because that's kind of the way that I feel. And it's not going to be fair to you guys either if you guys find some legitimate joy in something and I just counter everything by saying, like, well, I think you're wrong and I think it sucks. You know, like, do I want to say that every week for every single topic that comes up? Like, I don't know. But, like,
that's going to be something to figure out once the season three premiere happens.
Yeah, but...
I remember the tweets. It's like, you know, you're probably going to still watch the show because it's
I'm going to watch it, but, like...
But even on Twitter. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but even on Twitter, I'm not, you know, I'm going to spare people my ire of just saying every week, like, well, that was a Prime episode. Like, I don't really see the point of continuing to share that. I mean, I will watch it, but, I'll, you know, if all I have is just negative bile to spew about the show every week, then, you know, it's probably best if I just, you know, keep that to myself. I'll keep watching, hoping something interesting happens. But I mean, this season has drained me. I mean, I came into season two legitimately excited. There were several episodes that had me absolutely pumped about what was going to happen, and here we are by the end of it. Like, I don't know what this finale could have done to make me excited. I feel completely, absolutely apathetic about everything that's happened. Even the characters that still exist that I have defended and loved and just couldn't wait for an episode to air that's focused on them. Like, I just, you know, I'm just kind of completely fallen out of love with it. And I just don't know if I...
You just gotta see how you feel once you see the season three thing. Like, yeah. If you feel like it's going to be not fun to talk about season three's thing, then yeah, it's like, as with all things podcasting, if it becomes something that is legitimately not fun to actually do, that is when one should probably step back and
yeah, I agree with that. And I have listened to shows where every single week, even Transformers related podcasts that probably went a year longer than they should have, of every single week saying like, well, this sucks. I don't know why anybody would want this. This sucks. Everything sucks. See you next week. Like, that's not something that anyone wants to listen to. I'm sure. Well, I take that back. I'm sure that there are some people that would love to tune in just to hear us make fun of stuff, and that's fine. But I don't think that's what any of us want primetime to be.
No, we don't want
this to be the Revenge of the Fallen movie special where we just come in and just, you know, make fun of it and find ways to laugh at it in ways that it was not meant to be enjoyed. Like that I don't think any of us want that. So
yeah, like
I don't think it's fair to anyone, listener, the show, you guys, if that's all I have to offer every week.
So, yeah, and like I'm gonna come back and do it. And I, you know, once we get to the season three premiere, I'll run a prime time, we'll see who's up for it. And yeah. You know, no one is ever pressured to take part in these things, so by all means, it's not going to be any kind of big secret, like, you know, we're going to cut GOG from the show because the dude's going to bring it down. It's
see no, how but people I mean feel that's my I mean I, I've other than public tweets, it's not something that we've discussed, but it's something that I mean I take pride. I'm not saying WTF is not the greatest thing that's ever happened to the history of mankind, but I think we also try to be as legit as possible with this stuff. And, you know, I don't want the show to fall to levels that I have seen other shows fall down to. And so if I feel that that's all I have to offer, it's time for me to step back. And I feel the same way even about the main episodes. If I get to the point to where I just don't love the brand anymore, I'm not going to do like some people do and stick around for a year and just tell everyone how bad it sucks. You know, at that point, it's time for me to hang my hat and say, like, this isn't for me anymore. I definitely don't feel that way about the brand, but I kind of feel that way about Prime to a large extent. I feel like it's time for me to say, like, I've kind of had my say. And if I don't have anything more to offer, then I could certainly record a bit and you could just put, I tell you what, I could probably record a few choice lines, and on the episodes where I don't decide to show up, you could just play it. So, GOG, what do you think? And play my pre-recorded bit, because it'll probably be pretty accurate.
Story potential is there, but it's fallen short in several ways.
Yeah.
I still can't believe they killed off Dreadwing. Just make that the recording I play. I still can't believe they killed off Dreadwing. What are your thoughts
just,
on what are
just
your thoughts
have,
on,
I still can't believe
again,
they killed
and again,
off
I,
and then I, just have the drop-in the drop-in line.
What are your
Dreadwing,
thoughts on
okay,
the Beast Hunters?
Prime.
I can't
Optimus
believe
Prime.
They killed off Dreadwing.
And again, for the record, like, I have no problem with the conceptual death of Dreadwing.
Yeah, yeah,
They could have killed, because I know that people are going to come at me for this, they could have killed Dreadwing in a way that was completely and totally meaningful for me. But
me too.
Way that they did it fell completely flat, and I felt like it was... the character in the end just absolutely meant nothing. Whereas just a few tweaks to that and it could have been amazing.
I've read opinions
where people do think it's amazing, and I cannot for the life of me even grasp where they're coming from. That doesn't mean that their opinion is invalid. It just means that I, in no way, shape or form can I relate to anything that they are speaking. So that disappoints me because, like I said, tons of potential. And at some point, also, I'm going to be fair, like, at some point you just have to say, maybe the show just isn't for me, because I can't expect a show to write itself and cater to what I desire out of a show. It's up to me to decide, you know, whether the show was good or bad, but to ask the show to, you know, I feel like I've been doing that a bit lately too, where I'm like, no, you should have done it that way. You should have taken my idea. You know, but that just kind of goes in line with the whole, like, nothing that this show is doing, nearly everything this show is doing, I'm finding disappointing as far as key moments. Every once in a while, I'll hit something that just absolutely resonates with me, and then they just, for every one moment of those, there's two or three lately that just drive it back in the opposite direction. But, so, I don't know. That's my thoughts for now, and... I mean, I would love for nothing more than the show to pull me back in, for me able to come here every week and get excited and have fun. Because I think I've still had a blast talking to you guys about it. It's fun being able to take a topical discussion. I mean, hell, we've been going for almost 2 hours now here.
Yeah,
it's
fun.
This is fun for me to be able to sit down and say and just hang out and talk about like a single topic with you guys and. Break it down and kind of go through all the intricacies of it.
I feel like digging up the positives too kind of helps. At least like when I find when we're talking on Primetime, the tone is much different than like sometimes your immediate reaction on Twitter, because you know it's been a day or two, and we're also able to kind of go like, well, what was the cool thing? Well, there's a little cool thing that was in there, and like, you know, digging up the little positives here and there. It's something that's really disappointing, talking to other people about it who are not going to just fall in line with, yeah, it sucks, man. Like, it can really help you find, like, these little nuggets here and there. You can, like, okay, well, it wasn't a waste of my time, because there was that cool scene, there was that cool line. And it still sucks that, like, 99% of this thing disappointed me, but at least we have these little gems here and there. That's why I always like to try to bring up the good and the bad in these primetime episodes. Even in the movie specials we did. You know, we'll probably have at least one more of those in our time. I'm quite sure. But Aaron, what were your thoughts on Prime Season 2?
I think you hit a solid point as you were talking about it. It seems like there were quite a few moments that just had a failed follow through. A lot of really neat concepts through the season. I mean, some very good episodes through the season, but a lot of concepts that just seemed like, hey, this seems like it could be done really well. Okay, you're going to do it like that. All right. Well, okay. You know, the potential impact of Bulkhead being out of commission after the talks and the sucker punch from behind, you know, that could have been something that was just hugely, hugely impactful. And it ended up being, he was inconvenienced for a couple of episodes. It seemed like it wasn't, you know, imagine if they had continued through up until the finale with him being just in terrible shape, moving around, having to use the Apex armor in order to get around. And still, Bulkhead can make it to that final climactic fight and be doing big things, but the fact that he's having to... What was the TV show? Mantis? If you remember that nugget of the 90s, where it was the guy that was the cripple that had to use the exosuit thing to then fight crime. You know, there could be a very...
Mantis sounds awesome as a name of a show, but I've also never heard of it before.
It was I think technically a DC spinoff, but it's, you know, the effects that this has on just the psyche of a person of, no, okay, I want to be out there doing good things, but I can't unless I have on this ish and have to do that. It's something that just seems like it had strong potential, and just so many times was like, and no. You know, how many of these cliffhangers are like, ooh, this could be a really neat thing. And then after the commercial break or in the next episode, it's just like, okay, that's done. What's next? So I don't think I'm to the point of throwing my hands up in the air and walking away. But I can see definitely how, you know, for GOG. And I can see it a little bit in myself. Of there's just a lot of places where there's just built up potential that's just not been fulfilled at all.
And for countless Twitter bros,
too. For no apparent reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like it happened in one episode or it happened a couple of places. It's just been, nope.
Yeah, I feel like Prime's writers get subject to mandate.
Yeah.
Is the best way I can put it. Even if that's not happening, it certainly feels like it. It feels like a writer really falls in love with an idea to the point.
I think there's a good chance that's happening. I've heard a lot of discussion about the possibility that, and I haven't read the interview. I don't know if I've missed an interview or something, but I've seen a lot of people say that if you read an interview, there's a bit of a hint that the writers had no idea that this whole Beast Hunters thing was going to be season 3. So a lot of the stuff that they had planned was kind of cut early. So I don't know if that's fan speculation or if there's legitimate proof in that.
Yeah,
if there is one way or another, please share. Like if there are hints that the writers or producers have dropped that were choices by Hasbro has kind of altered the story that they want to tell, please share that because I want to see that. And it's stuff that I've missed and I've looked for it a bit on my own and wasn't able to find anything. And I am really, really interested in seeing that stuff.
Because I can't fathom a writer creating things like the mech plot line, a writer, you know, writing for characters like Dreadwing and getting to the unbelievably juicy potential of Dreadwing finding out what happened to Skyquake. Oh, a writer can't hit that and on their own decide to end it the way that the show ended those things.
Yeah, I even said that during the mech episode. Like I said that from the beginning, that it feels like the writer was handed the job of saying, we've suddenly decided that we wanted to be through with this storyline. We want you to resolve it in complete and total finality. Have at it.
Yeah, because a writer otherwise, doesn't create something engaging and then end it unengagingly. A good writer.
You've got 12 minutes to end this because we have to end the other thing in the second half of the episode.
Yeah, like most writers are as in love with what they write as we are, taking it in as viewers. And so it's often when something is so beautifully written and then it has a horrible way of ending, it's usually either a different writer or it is something outside of the control of the writer who put the passion into it. And, you know, and these are things we're not going to find out when Beast Hunters is on the air, because you can't say that about your show when it's on the air.
I think this is the most compelling storytelling that we've written to this point.
The only time you can start talking smack on your own production when it's on the air is if you, maybe you know, you're Dan Harmon, and then you...
but he got pulled off at the same time though. Oh, sorry.
So, what do we know when Beast Hunters is premiering?
I don't believe so.
Yeah,
soon.
I mean, episodes are recorded. Parts have been animated, but I mean, I don't know if we have a date on when it's going to begin to air.
Not that I can recall.
Probably not till 2013 would be my prediction.
That's not a hard guess here, seeing as we don't have much of 2012 left.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to sound really smart.
Yeah.
But that does mean we're going to be prime timeless for a good month or so, if not longer. I mean, we'll see... when the show gets going again, I doubt it's going to be Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated, but we could still have a little bit of downtime. So, I'm actually kind of looking forward to that. I could use not doing double weekly podcasts for a little while. That would be nice. Yeah. The moment I get a moment to breathe, it's book club and it's the Poncho supplemental. They all just start coming up all over again.
Yeah. And I want to say that too now, like, for all my, and I'll say it, like, for all my whining and complaining about what Prime is not doing right, like, man, I will say right now, like, the comics after this latest soft reboot have been absolutely resonating with me and hitting nearly everything that I have wanted out of Prime. So I'm kind of excited to go into to start up book club again. So I guess maybe the three of us need to talk about getting that started
and how
we're going to do it. But I'm kind of really looking forward to talking about that stuff.
Throwing it out there on the recording, I think a really cool way to kick off book club would be to cover the two volume one trades that kick off the soft reboot.
Okay. I have all the individual episodes, so I'd have to know which ones are in it, but
I could read them off, but yeah, it feels like those would be two really good book clubs, like cover, or, I think it'd be cool to do them as two, but I mean, you know, RID 1 and MTM E 1.
Yeah. How many issues are in each trade?
It's weird. One
IDW
of them,
normally does six?
It's six issues each, but the one for More Than Meets the Eye uses up some of those issues.
Death of Optimus Prime?
Yeah, it's Death of Optimus Prime and then More Than Meets the Eye 1 to 4.
Okay.
Which is, I mean, it's nice because Death of Optimus Prime is part of the soft reboot. And a little bit book club here, but I had been months behind, and my brother for my birthday got me a whole bunch of the trades I was missing, stuff I was missing. Reading through, like, from, I think it's like IDW Volume 4, like, through to Chaos, through to Death of Optimus Prime and RID and More Than Meets the Eye, the stuff, like, the span of time between me closing up Chaos and opening up the next book, I still feel like they say what happened between those things, but I feel like they kind of just sort of say it and go like, look, we're saying it, so we're saying it, but really we want to start fresh in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
apparently the death, I read that the, not the death, but what was the one before that where it's like, Ironhide's flash forward?
Oh, that's
like 31.
Yeah, yeah, it's at the end of
ongoing
one of the books.
31. Like, yeah. I read somewhere that was basically written to be in case the soft reboot doesn't get approved, that they were going to like end it there if they had to. So,
wow.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. But
I'm
looking forward to talking about those books because they're good.
Yeah, so. And I am definitely going to I have kind of decided as far, like, I want to own physical books, but missing out monthlies that long and getting a whole bunch of trades really has me just wanting to own trades. So I need to, once I get more of my offline-ish together, get me a Comixology account so I can still at least be supporting IDW's current run and go a bit digital on that stuff. If Comixology actually supports things, I assume they do. That's the impression I got.
They do. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can.
Okay.
Unless there's something weird in Canada that you can.
Yeah, I mean, that's. I was talking to Mikey, and he gave me the impression that Comixology satisfies the need to actually directly support things. Yeah. Unless we have anything else to add, that is Prime Time Season 2. Hope it's been fun listening. Sorry about all the double features we ended up doing, but scheduling differences and then in some cases just episodes feeling like they could roll together, that stuff took place. Which kind of nullifies my whining about double weekly podcasts. So we go back a few minutes there and just give myself a little smack in the back of the head. Yeah, Primetime will be back. We are not dropping Primetime for any reason, because I'm going to still want to talk about stuff. Book Club is floating around behind us, especially with such a great dearth of good IDW Transformers fiction going on right now. Insert paranoid theory involving the word Disney. We'll be back with some stuff, but until the next time I get to scream in the mic to open an episode, this has been myself, it's been Gog, it's been Aaron, and for Season 2, we are a Prime out!
What the f*** it means, but you got some badass perpetrators that are here to stay.